This is News. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the final victory belongs to Palestinians in the Gaza Strip in the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the Israeli massacre of women and children in Gaza shows that the regime is incapable of defeating the resistance. Iran's leader stressed that Israel's defeat comes in spite of all the military and financial support the regime is receiving from its Western benefactors. He made the remarks in a meeting with the head of the Islamic Jihad movement, Ziad al-Nakhala. For his part, Nakhala said, despite all the hardships, Palestinians have foiled the Israeli plots to defeat and destroy the resistance in Gaza. He added that the people of Gaza and the resistance forces are determined to continue their struggle until final victory. Nearly 6 months into the Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip, the regime is pushing ahead with a deadly onslaught on the besieged territory. Over the past 24 hours, 62 more Palestinians have been killed in airstrikes. Fresh Israeli bombardments targeted several areas, including the central city of Deir al-Balah. In Gaza City, warplanes once again hit the vicinity of Al-Shifa Hospital. The medical complex has been under direct Israeli attack and fire for nearly 2 weeks. Right now, heavy clashes are also underway in the vicinity of the hospital. Since the onset of the war, more than 32,550 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza, mostly women and children. Muti Abu-Musab is a correspondent joining us from Deir al-Balah. Muti, tell us the latest that you have, especially the fighting that we understand to be pretty heavy around the Al-Shifa Hospital.
Yes, actually, the Israeli occupation forces are still decimating Gaza Strip with more airstrikes and more attacks. Those airstrikes and attacks were intensified over the last couple of hours against Gaza City, whereas Ash-Shat, Ar-Rimal, and Az-Zaytun neighborhoods were subjected to heavy bombardments. Several residential buildings were destroyed over those relentless airstrikes. In the meantime, the Israeli occupation forces also renewed their attacks and airstrikes against the western parts of Gaza City, particularly the surrounding areas of the Ashifa Medical Complex. According to the spokesperson of the Gaza's civil defense crews, hundreds of the Palestinian dead bodies are still trapped under the rubble of those destroyed houses. Those crews are unable to extract them over the ceaseless and the constant Israeli attacks that are still hitting those areas. The entire center squares were reduced to rubble over those attacks. The entire residential buildings were destroyed to the ground over the ceaseless and the chronic Israeli attacks over that area. In the meantime, the Israeli occupation forces also renewed their strikes and attacks against the western parts of Khan Yunis city. These moments, as we speak right now, the Israeli artillery is shelling those areas, targeting the residential buildings there. It's the same situation compared in terms of the destruction unfolding as a result of the continuous Israeli attacks. We are talking about entire residential squares were rendered to rubble over those attacks that are still hitting that area. I mean, the surrounding area of the Nasser Medical Complex and the Al Amal Hospital. According to Gaza's health ministry, that at least 4 Palestinian dead bodies were extracted as a result of those continuous airstrikes. In the meantime, the Palestinian resistance continued their counterattacks against the Israeli occupation forces. They are talking about fierce clashes erupted between the Palestinian resistance and the Israeli occupation forces. And the Israeli helicopters were seen landing over that area in a way to evacuate the Israeli soldiers who got injured and wounded over those attacks or counterattacks. So we are talking about continuous Israeli attacks and counterattacks waged by the Palestinian resistance against the Israeli occupation forces. While when it comes to Rafah City, the Israeli warplanes also renewed their attacks against the northern part of the city. Several Israeli airstrikes were launched against the northern part of the city, targeting the residential buildings, knowing that the Rafah city is still housing and accepting 1.4 million Palestinian civilians who are taking shelter in the city amid catastrophic and disastrous humanitarian conditions. Over to you.
Thank you for that. Muti Abu-Musab there from Deir al-Balah. We appreciate it. Muti, be safe. Thank you. The new footage emerges showing unarmed Palestinian men waving white flags of surrender and are fatally shot by Israeli troops and buried by bulldozer near Gaza City. The Hamas resistance movement has condemned the regime and says the footage is further evidence of the scale of fascism and criminality of the Zionist regime. The Hamas resistance movement has reiterated its determination to end the Israeli onslaught, saying the regime has failed to achieve any of its declared goals in Gaza.
And the Israeli occupation wants to prolong the battle. It doesn't want to end the war for a simple reason, which is that the Israeli occupation has not achieved any of its goals which it had declared. It hasn't eliminated the resistance. The resistance is still on the ground. It hasn't retrieved the prisoners.
In an interview in Tehran, Haya said Israel wants to prolong the onslaught. He censured Washington's complicity in the crimes committed against Palestinians, saying that the U.S. will pay a heavy price for its support in the genocide in Gaza. The deputy chief of Hamas movement said some Arab countries' support for Palestinians have not been enough. He said the movement was prepared to show flexibility in ceasefire talks for the sake of Palestinians. He added that Hamas does not insist on ruling Gaza alone. Haya also held anti-Israel operations in the region, saying the regime has failed to stop such attacks. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has conducted fresh retaliatory attacks against Israeli targets in the occupied territories. The twin drone attack hit an Israeli army headquarters in the occupied Safed city. Resistance fighters also targeted the newly formed Lyman Brigade's headquarters with artillery shells. A round of resistance missile attacks also struck the Israeli cities of Shlomi and Goren in the northern occupied territories. Hezbollah says the retaliatory operations are in response to the regime's airstrikes on a Lebanese medical facility on Wednesday that killed several paramedics. Tensions remain high between Hezbollah and Israel since the regime launched its genocidal war on Gaza in early October. Both sides have been exchanging aid in Lebanon in recent weeks. Activists have staged a pro-Palestine protest inside the Department of Business and Trades in London, calling on the British government to end arms sales to Israel. The protesters from London for Free Palestine staged a sit-in in the lobby of the building. They chanted slogans such as Stop Arms Sales to Israel, while waving Palestinian flags. London for Free Palestine has joined some lawmakers and pressure groups like Campaign Against Arms Trade to revoke arms export licenses to Israel. Advocacy groups believe the UK licensed weapons are being used by Israel in its genocidal war in Gaza. British officials have called the amount of UK's military exports to Israel relatively small. However, figures show just last year, the country exported 42 million euros worth of military equipment to Israel. Nearly 6 months into the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war in the Gaza Strip, a recent poll shows support for the resistance remains high among Palestinians. According to the latest data, two-thirds of Palestinians believe that the October 7th Al-Aqsa flood operation was a correct move. In our explainer program, we took a closer look at the issue.
Well, it's been close to 6 months since the October 7th Operation Al-Aqsa flood. Does the Palestinian resistance group Hamas still maintain popular support? And what about the future of Palestine? What is the best way forward? Those questions were posed through a poll conducted by the Palestinian Center for Policy and Survey Research, PSR. Now, most of the questions asked in the first quarter of 2024 revolved around the October 7th offensive, the question of armed struggle against the Israeli regime, popularity of Hamas versus the Palestinian authorities, Fatah movement, and the future of Palestine, including the Gaza Strip. When it comes to Hamas's decision to launch the October 7th offensive, a vast majority, that's 71% compared to 72% in December 2023, say that it was a correct move. This as the support in the West Bank drops by 11%, and yet it has increased in the Gaza Strip by 14%. On the October 7th operation, comparing respondents who watched videos to those who did, 19% believe Hamas committed atrocities compared to 81% who didn't think so. Meanwhile, amongst the ones that didn't watch the videos, more than 97% believe that Hamas did not commit any atrocities against Israeli civilians, and only 3% said it did. It's worth noting that the chair of Israel's civil commission, Kokav Eliakim Levy, she was the one who had said that Hamas committed mass rapes, and she's now been exposed as a fraud even by Israel. It turns out that this civil commission described by the White House as if it were an official Israeli body, does not even exist. Another point of the poll was what Palestinians consider the most vital goals. 42% believe an end to the Israeli occupation in the areas occupied in 1967 and a Palestinian state in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip with Al-Quds as its capital should be the first goal. By contrast, 33% believe the right of return of refugees to their 1948 towns and villages should be the first goal. In light of the increase in settler terrorist attacks against Palestinian towns and villages, the poll asked, what means are most effective in combating the regime forces? The largest percentage, 41%, chose the formation of armed groups. 23% chose to deploy Palestinian police forces. Another 23%, they chose the Israeli army to take measures. And only 8% chose unarmed groups to protect their areas. This is very important since the attacks by the regime forces in the West Bank have increased dramatically since October the 7th, the Operation Al-Aqsa flood. The total killed is 360, while the number arrested is 7,350. The number of incursions, especially in refugee camps, well, that's going on a daily basis. And now to the support for the two-state solution. The poll indicated 61% believe the two-state solution is no longer practical due to settlement expansion, but 37% believe that it's still practical. Moreover, 72% believe that the chances for an independent Palestinian state alongside Israel in the next 5 years are slim or non-existent, and 27% believe the chances are medium or high. And finally, if new parliamentary elections were held today with the participation of all political forces that participated in the 2006 elections, only 64% say they would participate in them. For Hamas, 14% for Fatah, 6% for third parties, and 15% remain undecided. Among the voters, support for Hamas stands at 47%, Fatah 22%, third parties 9%, and the undecided at 24%.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has distributed a large amount of humanitarian aid among Palestinian refugees in Syria in the holy month of Ramadan as part of its unwavering support for the Palestinian cause. Ibrahim Wahdi has more from Damascus.
In the holy month of Ramadan and as part of its commitment to Al-Quds International Day, the Islamic Republic of Iran, via its embassy in Damascus, has distributed several tons of humanitarian aid among Palestinian refugees and resistance factions in Syria. The convoy included essential food kits as a gift from the Iranian nation.
The Islamic Republic of Iran and the Axis of Resistance stand by the oppressed Palestinian people in the face of the Western and American support for the Israeli entity, which has not ceased its crimes against the Palestinian people in Gaza. Today's gathering comes within the framework of supporting the resilient and patient Palestinian people.
This gift is part of a series of annual donations offered by the Islamic Republic of Iran to Palestinian refugees during the month of Ramadan in several Syrian cities. According to Palestinian officials, this large amount of aid delivered by Iran is a message of solidarity with and commitment to the Palestinian cause.
This is a significant step within the framework of Iran's support for the resistance of the Palestinian people. This support has been reflected in all forms and means since the victory of the Islamic Revolution under the leadership of Imam Khomeini, may God rest his soul, and whose legacy continued with the leader Imam Ali Khamenei. Therefore, we as Palestinian people and resistance factions appreciate this gift and everything that the Islamic Republic is providing.
The Palestinian factions expressed their gratitude to the Islamic Republic of Iran for this gift that is presented every year to the Palestinian people.
This aid provided by the Islamic Republic of Iran during the month of Ramadan to the Palestinian people is considered as proof of Iran's great role and the interdependence between the Iranian and Palestinian people. These activities confirm the loyalty of the Palestinian people to the Axis of Resistance, in addition to the fundamental and strategic role of Syria and Iran in the Axis of Resistance.
With this humanitarian aid, Iran demonstrates that true support lies in actions rather than words, and it reflects the enduring place of the Palestinian cause in every Iranian's heart.
This gift is not only a gesture of love from the Iranian leadership and people. More importantly, it underscores their unwavering commitment to help their Palestinian brethren wherever they are. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The Limelight.
In Gaza, everything is in ruins, and the spirit of Ramadan has been reduced to a mere shadow of its former self. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, for the 2.2 million Muslims in Gaza, Ramadan has historically been a time of joyous social gatherings, spiritual reflection, faith renewal, and cherished family reunions. However, over the past decade, recurring Israeli regime wars on the Gaza Strip have cast a dark shadow over this once vibrant tradition. The ongoing genocidal assault by the Zionist regime, which has claimed more than 32,000 Palestinian lives and has laid waste to Gaza, made this a most devastating month. Today, the reality of life in Gaza has drastically changed. Under normal conditions, as normal as they could be during a blockade, The weeks leading up to Ramadan are filled with anticipation and preparation. The streets of Gaza would come alive as households and businesses adorn their balconies and storefronts with lanterns to welcome the holy month. This cherished tradition, led by young mothers and enthusiastic youth, created a vibrant atmosphere throughout the neighborhood. But this year, Ramadan is a sad month. The vibrant nighttime streets of Gaza have fallen into gloomy silence. Where there was once life, there is now rubble. The joyous sounds of children playing have been replaced by the heart-wrenching cries of those trapped beneath it. The once colorful lights and lanterns that used to adorn the roads have been replaced by the harsh flashes of bombs and utter destruction. Mosques, once crowded with worshippers, either stand empty or lie in ruins. Imams now appeal to individuals to worship within the confines of their own homes or makeshift tents. And yet, the devastation extends beyond the visual landscape. The atmosphere of Ramadan nights, filled with tawarih prayers in mosques and Quranic recitation, has been replaced by the sounds of explosions from the Zionist regime's bombs. The aromas that permeated Gaza's streets and shops are now distant memories. The bustling markets like Al-Zawiya, Gaza's oldest market, were stocked with buckets of sour pickles and olives, cartons of various dates, pyramids of spices, dried fruits, jams, and other colorful food items. Everything has been reduced to ruins now. This year is different in Gaza. Palestinians no longer have the luxury of choice when it comes to their meals. Instead, they rely on a few cans of food received in aid parcels. While most people fasting around the world may experience headaches and fatigue from the lack of food and caffeine, this year Palestinians did not feel the exhaustion from that first day of Ramadan, since they have already been enduring food deprivation and a lack of basic necessities for months. Today, people in Gaza fast through iftar, not out of choice, but because they lack food and water. The spirit of Ramadan in Gaza has been reduced to a mere shadow of its former self. Sprawling banquets and gatherings have given way to canned meals. Families no longer gather in celebration, but in mourning. The destruction of homes, markets, schools, the loss of loved ones, and the disruption of daily life have left them grappling with unimaginable pain and loss. For more than 5 months, Gaza has endured massacres, disease, starvation, displacement, expulsion, and thirst. Meanwhile, Al Jazeera English wrote, "For the people of Gaza, Ramadan is indeed the most special time of year. Gaza during Ramadan is the most beautiful place on earth. But this holy month, Palestinians cannot celebrate and enjoy worship in peace. The colorful lights and lanterns and the chants and songs have been replaced with the flashes and sounds of Israeli regime bombs exploding. The joyful noise of children playing outside in the streets has been replaced with the screams of people buried under the wreckage after another Israeli regime bombardment. The neighborhoods full of life have been transferred into graveyards. Mosques are not crowded with people because they are all destroyed. The streets are not bustling with people because they are all covered in rubble. People fast past iftar because they have no food or water. The families gather not to greet each other and celebrate, but to mourn together the dead. As the holy month of Ramadan began, Palestinians were bidding farewell to martyr after martyr. The pain is made that much worse by the realization that the world has abandoned the Palestinian people, allowing the child killer regime of Israel to continue its genocide during the Muslim holy month.
Hidden Files. Do you condemn Hamas? This has been mainstream media's favorite question ever since Hamas's preemptive strike on occupied Palestine on October the 7th. But sadly for them, they're no longer the only media that people get their news from. After some 75 years of the ongoing genocide in Palestine, the journalists on the ground were finally able to get their voice across to people all over the world and to inform them of the bombings that have killed tens of thousands of Palestinians, mostly women and children. And that's when October 7th could no longer justify the ongoing genocide, even in the minds of former supporters of the Israeli regime. Now, many have already realized that mainstream media blamed Hamas to buy more time for the Zionist regime to murder as many Palestinians as they could and to occupy as much land as possible. But the question remains, from a legal perspective, who is responsible for the thousands of lives lost, especially since October the 7th? Hello, I'm Marzieh Hashimi, and this is Hidden Files. This is the discussion that we will have today with lawyer and doctor of jurisprudence and human rights activist Stanley Cohen. Stay tuned, please.
Stanley Cohen is an American lawyer and human rights activist. Following graduation from college, Stanley started working as a VISTA volunteer and helped set up legal service projects in Native American reservations. Cohen then went on to work as a community organizer to tackle the issues of homeless teens and later as an administrator in a federally funded anti-poverty agency. He then went on to law school to defend human rights on a legal level and earned a doctorate of jurisprudence. Since then, he has worked on various lawsuits, from those taking on the NSA spying program to others involving false accusations targeting various minorities and individuals. Defending Patrice Lumumba against accusations of the material support of terrorism, and defending the Hamas political leader against extradition by the Israeli regime. Due to his success in various such legal projects, Stanley Cohen has for long been a target for smearing campaigns and various threats, which he has survived to date.
Well, thank you so much, Stanley Cohen, for being with us. I'd like to start off with mainstream media's favorite question. Do you condemn Hamas? And what are the legal definitions of their actions according to law?
I like to respond to that question with, who did you pick on before Hamas from, 1936 to 1985? The mainstream media likes to use Hamas as the convenient boogeyman, likes to use any quote-unquote Islamist movement, even one that's overseeing, with all the difficulties, the civil society that was voted into office. But it's always Hamas. So they look to October 7th, and they completely ignore the history of Israeli genocide, Israeli ethnic cleansing, Israeli war crimes, Israeli crimes against humanity, and they say it's Hamas. Do I condemn Hamas? No. Hamas is a national liberation movement that has been in the forefront of the resistance since 1985. It has a leadership that is highly educated, sophisticated, learned, committed to their people from Gaza. These are not people that one day got on a plane and came from Brooklyn, as the Zionists are, to some foreign country. These are people that grew up in Gaza, many of whom the leadership left over a number of years to pursue education elsewhere, received doctorate degrees. They're academics, they're scholars, they're lawyers, they're scientists, they're producers, they're directors, they're artists, and returned home to help to liberate Palestine. So do I condemn Hamas? No.
Well, let's talk a little bit about you, because you've represented many people who couldn't afford to pay you along the way. And I mean, given your expertise and your experience, you could have had a lot more money. Why did you choose a different path?
I recently had a discussion with a journalist who asked me the same question. I said, well, you know, I'm sure Henry Kissinger did not get to take his money with him. I'm sure Bill Gates will not be able to take his money with him. We have to make choices in life. Is it about the pursuit of profit? Is it about the pursuit of power? Is it about political control? Or is it about being part of a world community that's here for a very limited period of time, since that they too were not going to spend their lives pursuing money, but pursuing justice?
Well, why did you, you've decided to represent a lot of Hamas officials and other groups too, although there would be repercussions for you. Why is that the case?
Well, I had, years before I represented Abu Marzouk, who was one of the founders of Hamas, who was the original head of the political wing and is now still a major senior leader of the movement, I had been involved in supporting Palestinian self-determination, Palestinian independence, Palestinian liberation as a young lawyer. I organized some political actions. I was involved as an attorney representing people that were protesting against Israel years before even Hamas evolved. I had a very active role in a Muslim in the Islamic community in the United States, not trying to singularize it, because obviously it's a community of diversity with different priorities. In fact, through my work representing many dozens of Albanian Muslims who were charged with various situations in the United States, and who eventually, as a result of negotiations, went to Bosnia and joined the KLA with the approval of the United States, in essence fighting before the United States dragged NATO in, before the bombings occurred. That connected me in a different light to the Muslim community in the United States in general and to the Palestinian community in particular. And then one day when I had just finished a very long trial and was getting ready to go on holiday for a few weeks, I got a call from the leaders of one of these organizations who asked me if I could go to the federal prison, that there was a gentleman who had been picked up suddenly on an immigration hold, someone who was a lawful resident in the United States. And I really was too tired and I couldn't do it, and I recommended other lawyers. And then as an aside, I said, well, who is this person? And then he mentioned a name to me, and the name didn't mean anything to me at the time. And he said, Musa Abu Marzouk. And I said, who is that? And then he said, well, I said, no, I'm tired. I need to get away. I've got family and friends that are expecting me. We've got a cabin on the ocean. And then he said, well, he's the head of Hamas. And I went, oh, okay. So I called my family and I said, look, you're going to have to do what you have to do on your own. I've got to go see this gentleman. And I went to meet Abu Marzouk. And we spent a day or half a day talking. And I'll never forget, he looked at me when I walked in and he said, looked up and down at me, up and down. I had, my hair was all over the place and I had ripped dungarees on and I had a sweatshirt on that said, the first thing we do, quoting Shakespeare, we'll kill all the lawyers. And he looked at me and he said, who are you? And I told him, I used a certain term that I'd, a phrase that I'd been told to use to give him comfort, that I wasn't there as a representative of the government, I'd been sent friends. And I used it. And he said, well, who are you? As he stared at me up and down, amazed, and looked at me, and I said, well, I'm a lawyer. And he looked at me up and down, and he said, you're a lawyer? He said, I don't need a lawyer. And I said, you're right. You don't need one lawyer. You need a dozen lawyers. And he laughed and he said, sit down. And I did. And that was the beginning of probably 1,000 hours worth of one-on-one discussions that he and I had over the next 2 years. While we fought his case initially, it was for a removal order from the United States, and then the Knesset, an unprecedented act, issued an arrest warrant and demanded his extradition to Israel to stand trial for the Intifada. We became very close over the course of 2 years. And Abu Marzouk is not just a founder, a framer, and the original head of the political wing of Hamas. He's a brilliant political scientist. He's a brilliant internationalist. He's a travel gentleman who has, and still does, obviously, tremendous experience in politics and reality and history. He understands.
Wow, it's quite interesting, quite beautiful. I want to look at, if you give me permission, ask you a question about your Twitter account, or X, because you have a profile picture of two Hamas leaders there. I'd like to know why you have chosen that picture for your profile picture.
Sheikh Ahmed was a friend. I had the privilege and the pleasure of spending time with him, being hosted by him in Gaza on 5 or 6 occasions before he was assassinated. Abu Shanab was a dear friend. I spent a lot of time with Abu Shanab. In fact, the car in which he was assassinated was by an Israeli rocket. I had been in that car just 4 or 5 days before he had been murdered, going to an interview. And to show you the kindness, the support, the love of the Palestinian community in general and my relationship with it, I had left Gaza. I was handling a case in California. I figured it was early in the morning. I was asleep and my phone rang. And it was Abu Shanab's wife who told me she was giving me her condolences. She told me that Abu Shanab had been assassinated several hours before, and she wanted to give her condolences to me, his wife of decades, the mother of his children, because she knew how close we were. We were very close. Whenever I would go to Gaza, I would spend hours and days with Abu Shanab. He'd be my escort. He was a professor of engineering at the Islamic University in Gaza. He was educated, got his PhD in the United States. He was very close friends with Abu Marzouk. We hit it off right away. And I could think of no better way of honoring the memory of these two great warriors, these two wonderful, dynamic, principled fighters for justice and human rights.
Well, there are those who talk about Hamas on October the 7th and the legality as we are in the middle of this Israeli genocide. I mean, I'd like to hear your perspective based on international law regarding both sides of this current situation.
Under international law, an occupying force, an occupying state is permitted to maintain the de minimis or the minimum amount of security apparatus until there's a resolution as to the occupation. And that may mean small military outposts. That may mean the presence of occupying military or security forces. It does not permit the introduction of, as they have here, some 800,000 largely European colonialist Jews into the West Bank. It does not permit the theft of land and the establishment of so-called settlements. It does not permit for the building of walls. It does not permit for the establishment of infrastructure, of economy, of an infrastructure, a system that is comparable basically to a city. It doesn't permit it. And what they do, Israel, again, in going one step further, they decided because it's quote unquote a military zone, then people that have been in the military zone for for thousands of years, are not entitled to due process of the occupying state. They're not entitled to get access to Israeli courts. And as we've seen for years now, even those Israelis going through the Israeli court system are denied any real modicum of justice, due process, and equal protection with a system of government in which the Knesset can largely overrule what the court system wants to do. So what they've done is they've established this military system. It's staffed by military judges, by military security people out of uniform, are not civilians. Israeli police out of uniform are not civilians. Settlers that are carrying weapons are not civilians. Settler outposts that have heavy-duty weapons is not a civilian outpost. So there's that whole definition. But clearly, children, the elderly, the infirm are civilian under international law and should not be removed. But the problem that we have is not knowing who did what, when, where, why, or how, with just competing narratives. But when we talk about competing narratives, there's no debate over what's going on in Gaza. There's no debate what's been going on in Palestine for 75, 80, 85 years, even before the United Nations crafted Israel. Response to that is, Israel proved your case. The International Criminal Court ruled in 2021 that it has jurisdiction not just over Palestine because it's a signatory to the Rome Statute.
Well, I can't believe we're still watching this murder take place on a daily basis. What can be done to stop this genocide immediately, in your perspective?
The ICC has enough probable cause and has enough evidence to issue arrest warrants for Netanyahu and a dozen of his top advisors. That immediately limits their ability to travel. That immediately sends a message to people that want to come there to meet with them, conspire with them. That raises the accountability and the concern, because that really sends the message, okay, you are a suspected criminal. There is an arrest warrant for you. We're going to file it with Interpol. There is some standing for the notion that assets can be frozen, which Iran is well versed in, although it's been used not legally against Iran over the years, but as a political weapon. Assets can be frozen. Organizations, private entities that are now providing money, that are now providing weapons, that are now providing technical support to the Israeli government are on notice that if you continue, you may yourselves be involved in criminal wrongdoing. The General Assembly can ask the ICJ for an immediate recommendation. There is universal jurisdiction in many countries in this world. Claims can be brought. They've been started already in South Africa, which is similar to the ICC to the extent that they have the power to issue arrest warrants based upon probable cause. Red notices are set with Interpol. In states themselves, for example, in the United States, there can be an effort, there should be, lobbying and political effort to impose the Arms Export Control Act, which would freeze funding and weapons for Israel. There are domestic jurisdiction issues where if I'm a Palestinian and I have Palestinian-American or Palestinian who happens to be in the United States right now, who has family, businesses, homes, et cetera, that have been destroyed, who have been executed, that have been victimized by war crimes, they can attempt to bring domestic actions in domestic courts under U.S. law. There's an issue of what's called extraterritoriality, which has to do with the ability of U.S. courts to reach out for activity and conduct overseas directed at U.S. But keep in mind, the U.S. has had more than a few examples over the years of Palestinian American citizens, including famed journalists, that have been executed by Israel, and the Department of Justice has done nothing in the United States. So again, there's that double standard. So there is an ability to move the ICC to bring an advisory opinion action, the International Court of Jurisdiction of Justice, for universal jurisdictions to file arrest warrants for Netanyahu and other leaders of the military, to begin to identify businesses. And we know there have been lawsuits in the United States that have gone after tax-exempt organizations that provide money illegally, that are tax-exempt to so-called settlements in the occupied West Bank, in the Palestinian territories. So there is a combination of actions which can be brought domestically and internationally, which can be saying to Israel enough. But at this point, there have been 20,000 Palestinians who have lost their lives, almost all of them civilians, 60% of them children. 75% of Gaza is in ruins. 1.5 million people have been displaced. No food, no water, no electricity, no medical attention. Who knows what viruses and illnesses and plagues are going to befall. But again, this is not inadvertent. This is a determined effort, a designed plan that Israel has been waiting to unleash, and it has.
Yeah, it's absolutely unbelievable, mind-boggling what is taking place and how everyone is watching it. I mean, based on this international rules-based community that exists right now, do you think that this same community then will actually play a role in stopping this genocide?
I'm not waiting for the world community to all of a sudden grow principle of justice and independence and to move on behalf of a targeted people. If for that, you know, we will be generations away. But I am optimistic that the combination of movement at the ICC, movement at universal jurisdictions, but most important, millions of young, largely young women and men worldwide in the streets, demonstrating, the BDS movement expanding, Israeli military factories and plants that are providing information being demonstrated against, civil disobedience there. There have been acts of criminal mischief as well. So I think this combination, and keep in mind, I'm not naive. I don't believe that Biden or the West or anyone is going to step in, A, until after Israel has been able to accomplish the next step of its never-ending Nakba that it's designed to do. But I think they're reaching, and they're not going to step in out of principle or out of purpose or out of passion or out of love or out of humanity. But it's going to reach a point where politically it's boomeranging back against them, and that's when they're going to step in. But meanwhile, the fact that Netanyahu has been given a green light, I mean, now he's invading the South. They displaced 1.5 million people in the north and the center of Gaza and sent them down basically to the south. And now the tanks are rolling into the south and there's no defense. And there's hundreds, if not thousands, of Palestinian civilians again being slaughtered every day. There are variables, and I'm not suggesting or proposing that Hezbollah or Syria or anyone else continue their involvement or expand it. But that's an issue. Using the old anecdote, the colloquialism, the 800-pound gorilla in the China shop, there's increasing tension and fighting going on with Hezbollah in the north. Syria is pushing back again. I suspect the West Bank is going to explode. The real issue is I think there's going to come a point in time. Let us not forget, this is as much about Netanyahu trying to save himself from a judicial process that he's under indictment, I believe, in 2 or 3 cases, and the trials are beginning again. In Netanyahu's mind, as long as he can say we're at war, we're at war, we're at war, we're at war, he's safe. In the minds of the Kahanists that now run the military, the industrial military complex, the security state, as long as they get to say, see what they did to us, us, they're allowed to expand, they're allowed to justify increasing violence, expansion of so-called settlements. I don't know how it's going to play out at this point. One thing is for sure, that resolution, meanwhile, is thousands of Palestinian lives are being lost to the lust, the political lust, not just of Israel, but the proxy masters of the West that have been involved in this situation. And it's not just the West. I look at UAE, I look at Bahrain, I look at Saudi Arabia, I look at Morocco, I look at other Arab states or Gulf states that have been complicit throughout. I look at the fact that we had to beg Egypt to open Rafah even periodically for goods and services to come in. And meanwhile says, yes, we'll let Rafah should be open so that we can displace 1 million Palestinians. Egypt, you deal. Push them off into the Sinai. Let's send the Bedouin back to the desert. So we have complicity among certain states in the region. And then we have other states that have long supported Palestine. Iran is one. Doha, Qatar has been there. Algeria has been there. South Africa and African states have been there. So we've got this tension that's underway right now, and I'd like to be able to predict with some modicum of certainty how it's going to end up, but I really can't at this point.
Well, Stanley, I'd like to hear your final comments about the overall situation.
The situation is very clear on what's going on in Palestine. I think the world community, especially the young women and men of the world community, need to stay in the streets, need to demonstrate, need to engage in all sorts of activities against governments, need to make sure that the political leadership understand there is a price to pay for their blind obedience support for Israeli genocide. I send my love and solidarity to the Palestinian people. They know they are loved. They know they have support. We will fight with them. We will work with them. We will struggle with them. We will never forget we are family.
Stanley Cohen, it's been a pleasure having you on Hidden Files. I'd like to welcome my colleague, Maryam Azadcher, to Hidden Files. She's going to bring us a little bit more information about other situations taking place since October the 7th. Well, Maryam, welcome to the Hidden Files team. It's a pleasure having you on board.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure being part of this team.
Well, I'd like to look at, because outside the Palestinian territories, there were other situations taking place that has had a big effect. Tell us about that.
Yes, of course. So now what happened is that in bombing Gaza indiscriminately, the Israeli regime didn't just destroy Palestinian homes, schools, and hospitals. It also destroyed the widely believed myth that the international law was created to defend the rights of oppressed nations, and therefore there's no need for armed resistance. Now, today, this law has no real legitimacy and power in the eyes of millions who have seen Palestinian parents pull out the bodies of their children from under the rubble in the deafening silence of the so-called international community.
It's often said that one man's terrorist is another's freedom fighter. Well, in this case, one colonialist terrorist is a nation's resistance fighter, and this has held true throughout history, where indigenous peoples, like Palestinians, were invaded using lethal weapons, stripped of their lands, using legal weapons and documents, and portrayed as the perpetrators of using the weapon of media. But there's one thing these powers cannot win without your consent. And that is the control of your mind. So next time they ask you to condemn those fighting against colonial interests, maybe let them know that you have read their history. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us on this Hidden Files. It's time.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast T20 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for southern Africa, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
It speaks with me, the saint of the soil, from the blood and the ashes. It speaks with me, the sound of the rain, from the battle and the victory.
a cry to my enemy, and I cry out, cry out, cry out to the evil enemy. The flame within my heart will burn you. I cry out, and the thunder in my voice will deafen you. I cry out, tornado within my soul will blow you away. My bleeding wound once felt, though soon forgotten, but the aching sorrow in never gone. I raise it with my anger and love, love of my land, anger at your deeds. I raise it with my anger and love, love of my land, anger. Wounded by hatred, I'm breathing, breathing, breathing the magic perfume of my homeland, Palestine. Wounded in love, my hands turn around the branches of the olive tree, seeking peace.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Heavy clashes are underway in the vicinity of the Al-Shifa hospital as the U.S. Israeli genocide brings the death toll in Gaza to more than 32,500. Hamas deputy chief in the Gaza Strip stresses that the Israeli regime has not achieved any of its declared goals of the genocidal war. And dozens of protesters enter the Department of Business and Trade in London to call on the British government to end arms sales to Israel.